Well, hello, Patricia. It's lovely to be connecting with you again. I saw you recently when you kindly invited a group of Calgary women speakers here, and it's been delightful to reconnect and have you on the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show. So for those of you tuning in recently, newly, you haven't been on this show before, the show is intended to showcase amazing women who have risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph, chaos to confidence, and are now out in the world doing amazing things. So welcome to the show, and I'm delighted to have my guest today, Patricia Morgan, who's also here in Calgary with me at the base of the Rocky Mountains. Hello, Patricia.
Hi, glad to be here.
Yes, I was looking at your bio, and I have to say it's pretty impressive. I know you describe yourself as a spunky senior, so you've done a lot. However, there is a lot I want to just share in my introduction for you.
Okay.
If you haven't met Patricia, she's an amazing, bubbly person. She's an author, keynote speaker, and workshop leader. So she comes to the table with a world of experiences, with a master's degree in psychology. She works with individuals and organizations who want to build that everyday resilience in their people, either at home or at work. So she's helping them to what she calls lighten the load, brighten their outlook, and strengthen their personal and workplace resilience. She's the author of hundreds of articles, 10 books. Yay! I mean, I've only done one, and that was a 2-year project. and one of which was made into a CBC documentary. So I'd love to hear a bit more about that later on. She's also a recipient of the Women of Vision Award, which is a global TV award, and YWCA. She's past president of the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers, the Calgary CAPS chapter, and was also awarded the Spirit of CAPS for her contribution to the speaking industry in Canada. And no wonder, I've seen her speak, and it's no wonder she's been described as a well-known and respected author and a certified counselor, author, mother to three, grandmother to five, and happily married, as she says, most days. Love that. So her inspirations, her stories, the solutions that she's bringing, some of which she'll share today, I hope, are developed from solid research, extensive training in the field of humanistic psychology and positive psychology and in resilience. So she's got tons of experiences in a group facilitator, therapist, agency director, and family and community member. So Patricia, welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom show. And I'd love to hear your story. Tell me about what it is you're doing today, and also how did you get to this amazing mindset that you're bringing. What was the story of how you got started in this arena?
Well, that's a big question.
Well, we've got about 40 minutes, so
What am I up to do today? Sunday service. I've been going to the same place for 30 years for spiritual nourishment, the Center for Spiritual Living. It's a new thought movement which sustains me. So my husband and I go most Sundays when we're here. And then I attended a potluck lunch with my TEDx speaker coach committee. Was wonderful to see all of those folks. I got involved with TEDx a couple of years ago and loved the speaker coaching. That's volunteer work. So that's rewarding. And how did I get here today? One of the things that it doesn't mention in my bio is that I failed grade 7 and dropped out of high school. I find that of interest typically to my audiences because, she's got an education, she's written books. I did that all while struggling with believing I was stupid. And I did it step by step. So, the overnight success that you hear about, many people say, oh, that's an overnight success. There is no, I don't think there is any such thing as an overnight success. And I think your story also in your book, Words, Women and Wisdom, I'm never sure that I get the three W's, let's call it the three W book. You shared about your father, and I so resonated with that because I absolutely believe my father was a poor dirt farmer who was struggling on top of screaming in the middle of the night with night terrors from being in the Second World War. Nobody talked about post-traumatic stress disorder after the Second World War. Many families are still in recovery mode and passing on trauma to the next generation. I have three brothers with mixed experiences, and I am the one in the family who transformed myself by therapy. Mm. I have participated in extensive therapy, so much so that I got to the point where I thought, what is the meaning of this? I started asking, what is the meaning of this, quite a long time ago, and I would turn whatever experience I was having into meaning. Well, after about 10 years of therapy, I thought, well, I know so much about therapy. And I had friends saying, you should become a therapist, because I just started treating people like my first-rate therapist did. Now, the trick there is to find the first-rate therapist. There are many people that are doing psychology, therapy, counseling out of a book. It's too bad that you're not required to have some hard knocks in life and your own therapy before you can hang a shingle. But if you do find the right people, they can provide transformation and help mirror for you the possibility of healing those crazy messages in your head that are typically generational trauma. My father did not intend to get up each morning and tell me how stupid I was. He was struggling with his own demons. And later in life, I got mature enough, I interviewed him, and he had a lot of shame about not getting out of grade 8. He ran away, lied about his age, he joined the army, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time he's having children and they're going up the grades, he gets triggered, right? So now I've got some compassion for the guy, and I start to develop some love inside for me based on a story I start telling myself. He loved me because he didn't pass on nearly as much trauma as he was experiencing, regardless of him never telling me, I love you. I started doing this inside out work. So that's why I give credit to where I am now. My first book was written unintentionally. We adopted a little girl when she was 5 years of age. We were her fifth family. And back then we knew nothing about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. We went through 10 years of lots of parent blame, lots of misdiagnoses, such as psychopath, not told she doesn't have any conscience, lots of really bizarre conclusions by so-called experts. And she went through the cracks over and over again. And at age 16, she ran off and joined Satan's Choice biker gang. And 11 years of chaos afterwards. It was pretty chaotic living with her for 10 years as well, because there was no answers. And I was told that I could not be disciplining her correctly and consistently, because if I had been, lots of mother shame, by the way, if I had been, then she wouldn't be doing all these acting out behaviors. Well, we now know that she doesn't understand consequences. She does not abstract think. She cannot problem solve. She needs an external brain to help her walk through the world. And here's a young woman who's been in jail, had lots of trauma herself, and she's now 5.5 years working in the baby department of Toys R Us.
Wow.
Wow, I know. I'm just so proud of her, so proud of her. And she and I love Maya Angelou's saying, when you know better, you do better. We didn't manage to get a diagnosis for her by the time she was 40.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, that was a long journey, and it was very humbling for me. A lot of my growth has come through what I would call shaming, guilt, and embarrassment, quite frankly. And then picking myself up again and dusting myself off and figuring out, okay, what did I learn from this and how am I going to move forward? I was an early childhood educator when we adopted her, and to be shamed over and over again by so-called experts about my parenting stripped away my identity, which was probably a good thing. Because then I go to therapy and say, oh, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm good at. And, you know, we're not human doings.
Yep.
But in my 20s, that's all I had to hang on to, because I, you know, grew up in the farm and the boys were the ones that could do the farm work. So I was useless and I was stupid. But when my brother was born, when I was 14, then I had some value. So I toilet trained him and I read stories to him and I taught him how to read. And by the time he was six, I was ready to leave home and I became this early childhood educator. So, you know, fast forward, and I have this adopted daughter and all of the challenges and the blame pointed here was devastating for me. It was probably one of the biggest crises I had after leaving home, where, you know, we kids were physically, verbally, emotionally abused. And I, you know, I had this idea, if I found the perfect man, which I did. Do you remember? Do you remember that TV show called Robert Young playing Father Knows Best?
Well, remember that if it was something that was pre-85, that's when I got here in Canada. So a lot of the TV shows, I didn't see the same shows as.
That's true. Well, Father Knows Best, Robert Young had this very gentle voice, and the program was called Father Knows Best. And I used to watch that as a teenager, and I used to long for him to be my father. And he had a very calm persona, very gentle voice. And then when I'm 17, dropping out of high school, I meet my husband, who's in second year university at 17, and unconsciously I decide, gee, if I can hang on to him, it doesn't matter that I'm stupid. So I end up marrying him at 21. And then, of course, later in life, I call him an arrogant, you know what? He calls me an emotional flake. And, you know, what attracted us then starts to be the conflict. Fortunately, we've learned to grow together, and we're this month 51 years married.
Woohoo!
I know. So he was my like my escape valve, right?
Yeah.
And then this whole piece around being mother blamed, mother shamed, put me into therapy, where with two very good therapists, I started discovering my own self, my own intelligence, my own gifts. My own contributions.
Wow. It's so interesting. You know, I mean, I look at your bio now and I see, you know, all these amazing things that you're being awarded for as a speaker. And the more speaking that I do myself, I know that because I've done so much of my own work, I'm a better speaker because of it. And with the zillions of experiences that you bring to the table, you're showing up with your beingness, right? You're not acting, you're just being you and sharing from the heart. And it makes such a tremendous difference, especially when you're connecting with the audience. I mean, I've watched a few of your videos prior to setting up this interview, and I can see how much fun they're having.
I have a ham in me. Oh my goodness. I had an auntie who came to see me at some event, and also a cousin who came to see me at an event. They said, "What happened to you? You were such a shy little girl." I didn't have the heart to tell them that I wasn't shy. I was actually living in fear. I had a basket over my head of fear.
Yeah,
it was with great trepidation I took my first university class when I was over 30. I was terrified to see the mark. I love the title of this book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. If you know it's good for you, right?
Yep.
Step into something that is fearful for you, whether it's stand-up comedy or taking a class or something. The only class I ever dropped out of was knitting. I couldn't stand it. Well, I couldn't stand the losing the stitch. I was terrific at crocheting.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I love the creativity of professional speaking. I love the creativity of authorship. So, yeah, my first book was accidental, as I was saying. I wrote my daughter a letter once a month when she ran away. I didn't know what else to do. I was beside myself. And I thought, okay, if I can take one action that then allows me to go to bed with some peace, I'll do it. So I wrote her letter. And then after year 7.5, I almost quit. It was going in the mailbox, out, in, out. I was expecting some kind of result, not getting it. And then my one big spiritual clouds parted, and the voice from nowhere said, "You're not the only one struggling. Photocopy these letters, and maybe one day they'll help somebody." So it was 3.5 years later, I had this stack of letters that I had photocopied, and my daughter, I waited for 1 year while she was in treatment. I had visited her, she was 27, visited her in jail, said, "Are you ready for treatment?" She said, "Yes." And a two-week holiday in Ontario turned into a six-week odyssey to get help for her. Mm. And she did get clean and sober. And that's all explained in the book. And after that year, I said, I held onto these letters as a symbol of hope for our relationship. And she said, "Well, Mom, they were loving and supportive, but, you know, they're really boring." Oh, really? "Are you going to let me interview you about what it's like to be high when you're giving birth, and what it's like to have a shootout with the police, and what it's like to steal a car and roll it, and all these bizarre behaviors that I never understood? What the heck is going on?" And so we ended up writing this book, and that's the one that was eventually made into a CBC documentary. We were interviewed by Michelle Rogers. It was quite a good news story. It's when Colleen Klein, the premier's wife of Alberta, was doing drug coalitions to make parents and families and the communities aware of how to deal with drug issues. And I had developed 14 ways to love unconditionally with clear boundaries. For example, she would call maybe from jail and ask for money. We said no, maybe she wouldn't talk to me for 3 months because she'd be so angry. But I'd say, "I'd rather you were there. I know there's a roof over your head and you're being fed."
Right.
And limited drugs are drugs and that they can access in jail, apparently. So that ended up being the first book. And you probably know, after you write your first book, second or third isn't all that difficult because you kind of know the ropes and you have sort of a team that are there to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that book wasn't for everybody. And one day I was sitting on the toilet, the throne, and I had just agreed to speak to another women's event. There was going to be quite a few women at it, but it was either no fee or low fee. And I thought, I got to quit sort of giving myself away. I don't want to develop any resentment around this business. So what could I sell, have available? I don't sell from the platform, but what could I have available that women would like? And ever since I started therapy, I started collecting affirming quotations by women. Mm. I took all this mass, I pulled out all my journals and all my collections of quotations, and I wrote this little book. Well, it was just basic collation called She Said, Tapestry of Women's Quotations.
I think I have that downstairs, actually.
Became my second book.
Yeah.
And then when you have seconds, you know, it's just like having children.
What was the first one called? That was the
Love Her As She Is.
Okay, and that one is still on Amazon. I found
it's
that
on,
one.
It's on Amazon. I'm fiddling around with whether to put the rest on Amazon or not. They're all on my website available. So right. Love Her As She Is. People say, "How long did it take you to write it?" And oh my goodness, years and years and years. Yeah. The 14 ways to love unconditionally with clear boundaries is more the self-help clear part. I mean, I really analyzed some of the many mistakes that I made trying to connect with her. Now, we still, even when we wrote that book and released it in 2000, we did not know that Kelly was had the condition of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which affects functioning of the brain as well as some physiology.
Right.
So we had a diagnosis of hyperactivity, and that seemed to fit, but the disorder is much, much broader.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I make a weekly schedule for her and go all to all appointments because she has memory issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, you know, I see so many parallels, Patricia, between, you know, what you've been going through. And I mean, certainly, you know, without sharing all the details, because it's in process, more recently with my son, Alex, as well.
Yes.
I mean, certainly had his fair share of physical, emotional challenges.
Yeah.
And I mean, the medical system here, you know, yes, it's, you know, compared to what we have in the States, it's amazing. And yet there's just such a long time lag between, you know, getting a diagnosis, getting a referral to a specialist, getting in to see the specialist, and then they may help, they may not help, and then you're back to the drawing board again. Just had, you know, more of that last week. So that in itself teaches us, I think, to be resilient. I was the one who was going to bat for him when he was, you know, just a little tyke, and I was being told, you know, he may never even walk, and
right.
I refused to believe that that was the case. I mean, he took until 2.5. He's special needs, global developmental delays.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 2.5, but he walked. I mean, it was this sort of, you know, wobbly gait that was not very gracious. And he never really got the hang of riding a bike. He never had that balance because one ventricle had more fluid than the other and his balance was off, kind of like when you come out of a swimming pool and you've got water in your ears.
Yeah.
So I do have the utmost respect for the work that you've been doing as a mom with, you know, fetal alcohol syndrome, because that's something I know nothing about. And yet at the same time, I can empathize with you as a mom, with someone who is in your care and they're never really fully grown up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also keep an eye on my grandkids because there's some generational fetal alcohol spectrum disorder going on as well. We parents of children with disabilities, I think, have a lot in common. For 2 years, I've been going out to Camp Horizon for the mother's retreat for the mothers of children with disabilities.
Yep.
And there are a lot of parallels. I've burned out twice posting for, interviewing, training, managing support workers. It became all-consuming and very stressful. Because
yes.
you got these people you really don't have control over, and yet they're the main support in the moment with your beloved family. And we've had a number of betrayals. I actually had one worker sending drugs to our daughter's home that we own the home, rent it to her.
Well,
sending to her home so that she wouldn't get caught. Another one was posting on Facebook how he was going to abuse our grandson.
Oh.
Yeah, very discouraging. And then we've had some stellar human beings come into our life that really care about people with disabilities.
Yeah.
People do ask me the sanity of everything that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I can get weighed down with my daughter's disabilities. I love her dearly. She makes the decisions in her life, and sometimes as an adult, she makes her own decisions, and sometimes I find that frustrating or disappointing because I end up having to help her sometimes get out of some difficulty that I wouldn't have chosen. I've chosen that role. So my speaking, my writing, going out and doing workshops, my mentoring are places where I feel I'm choosing. And I can say no, I can say yes, I can do it my way. So that it nourishes me. And it also nourishes me to know that I'm a good support to her. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Well, just take a deep breath there, because that's a lot, right? And I just want to celebrate the fact that, you know, you've taken all of these experiences, all of these learnings, and now you've developed your own level of resilience. Mm-hmm. And also now have focused and centered a lot of your work around that to bring that resilience and those experiences and learnings to other women. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I know what you mean about the creative side, because that's definitely been an outlet for me. You know, I found it the most, I found it the easiest to write first thing in the morning. So getting up at 5, writing for an hour before my household, you know, everybody else gets up, and it was quiet and it was getting done. You know, certainly I think that this is a excellent way to showcase some of those stories. And you've kindly done a book review recently, which I'll put a link to as part of this interview. And it was really interesting comments. So before we get into the next piece, I'm just going to run the little video, which is actually part of the promotion that was for my book when it launched last year. So it launched on November 1st. November 2nd, it was a bestseller. Yay! Thank you to everybody who shared that information and helped that get to the bestseller status. And it is still up on Amazon. So just going to run this little video clip.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women, and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, the New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, the Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request. Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in 4 different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change. The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way, Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action, a time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words of Women and Wisdom today.
There we go. Let's see if we can get back to where we were now. Tricia, are you still there?
I'm here. Can you see me?
Oh,
I can see you.
There we go. Okay, so stop this share now. There.
I'd really say that your book, for me, represented a resource that women, let me say that again. Your book for me represented a book that women who are ready to step up will read and then be able to take action because then they'll know what to say. Many women want to step up, but they don't know the power of their words. And you've really given them like a power tool.
Thank you. Yeah. I actually just had a client conversation on Thursday, and we were almost at the end, and she said something along the lines, without breaking any confidences, I'm not going to say who it was, something along the lines of, you know, you're so good with words. And I thought, well, I better be if I wrote the book on that. But it was hard to just stop at 40 words, because there's 40 words and word concepts in the book. I had 52, and originally I was thinking I would perhaps model it after a couple of other resources out there and have one word for every week, but then it was getting past 300 pages, and so yes, that's where the next book comes in, because that one is focusing around still words, women, and wisdom, but it's focused around leadership, so more about delegation and empowering and engaging your team and those concepts. So more on that later. So thank you for your contribution to the writing world. I understand also that your speaking started a little bit later in life. So at age 53, you got asked to speak at a women and wellness conference. And I understand that out of what, 310 women, 210 attended your breakout session. So that was great, great writing in that advertisement for the session, and you had women laughing and crying and clapping, and what did they play at the end? Or they started singing to you?
Yes. It was quite the event. I had for years been providing workshops as a parent educator, one or two evenings a month in the community, as well as like for 10 years provided workshops for women's health resources. And the women's health resources decided to put on a big conference, a women in wellness conference. For 10 years, we had a women in wellness conference that went from that 310 women attending it the first year to thousands, 4,000 and 5,000 and 6,000 women attending for 10 years. And I spoke at it each year. But it was at that moment in the Palliser Hotel where I was being laid off my regular job. I was a facilitator of the Contemporary Woman Project, which was a government-funded project to take women on social assistance, put them in a classroom-like environment for 14 weeks, where we did workshops on resume writing, interviewing skills, how to dress, identifying strengths, and in the afternoon we did individual and group therapy with them. We would even pick them up at their home and take them to a women's shelter if we found out they were being abused. We basically took 20 women for 14 weeks, deep dive into transforming their lives. I did that for 6 years. I loved it. It was very feminist, very empowering. I've stayed in touch with a few of them over the years. It was devastating for me to have this collapse. But the same month, I spoke at that women's conference, and Mary Bowlby, the psychologist who had organized it, came to me afterwards and she said, "They seem to love what you did, Patricia. You're the talk of the conference. Would you like us to give out your name to organizations that call in?" And I said, "Oh, Mary, the $400 you paid me was very nice. But I must have put in 40 hours getting ready. And, you know, the $400 you paid me, I mean, that was quite nice, but I'm accustomed to more income." And she said, "Well, you see that, keynote speaker over there? Well, her name's Linda Edgecombe, and we paid her $5,000. And we put her up in a very nice room here at Palliser Hotel. And we flew her in and flew her out." And I said, "You are kidding. Introduce me." And that's how it all began. And I never went back working for an agency at the age of 53.
Isn't it incredible, though, you know, still as women, I mean, there aren't enough role models out there. but once we know that it's possible and we see one woman doing it, the light just turns right on. You know, it's so bright, you can't ignore it. And especially as a, you know, last fall, I was lucky enough to be nominated for, well, earlier in the year, I was nominated for a Women of Inspiration Award for the mentorship work that I've been doing. And
I was there, Yvonne, I was there at your award.
There we go. Uh-huh. Thank you. it was, you know, a really, really humbling to be recognized in that way. But as I was standing and talking in my speech about, you know, my original mentor, who was my mom, I mean, she was a reverse mentor because she showed me what not to do, in essence, because of that situation with my dad. And I mean, he was just mean, you know. PTSD does crazy things to people. He took the car keys after she taught him to drive and wouldn't let her have the car. I mean, he literally took her power away, her freedom. And so I thanked her in my acceptance speech. And it's just so important, I think, that we celebrate those who are rising from confidence, rising from chaos into confidence. And each of us brings unique gifts to the forefront. So for me, it's, yeah, it's my coaching, it's speaking, it's mentoring, and that's all helping women to flourish in business. And the most important piece, I think, is that conversation, because we can think confidently, but unless we can articulate it and have the other person engaging and buying into what we're saying, whether that's through the power of reciprocity, whether it's through using, appreciative inquiry concepts, which I talk about in the book, there's ways that we can ask for what we want. The other piece is getting really clear on what it is you want. So I'm glad to see that we're both doing mentoring in different ways. So you're mentoring people who want to do TED Talks. Is that part of it?
Yes and no. I'm a TEDx speaker coach, which means I'm assigned people that are screened. So people apply to do a TEDx talk. And based on the theme of each year, there's a lot of screening. And then they pair them up with somebody that they think is a good fit. So right. This year I had the journalist Barb Higgins and the architect, Douglas Cardinal, were assigned to me. The people I'm mentoring quite a few people who want to enter the professional speaking world. So that has been an offshoot of a program that I developed over 12 years ago for the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers called the Fast Track Program for Emerging Professional Speakers. And I have mentored in a volunteer capacity for over 12 years, over 240 people. And then the program was 6 months long and some of them started to come and see me. That program has now been collapsed. A program has replaced it nationally called the CAP Speaker Academy. It's an online program and you can find it by just Googling CAP Speaker Academy. And it is a series of videos and exercises. Some people prefer still more hands-on. So okay. I've had people approach me. So I have, there is a page on my website that talks about mentoring. And I was sort of forced into charging because it was getting overwhelming, the number of people that said, can I take you out for coffee and pick your brain? And I don't go out for coffee anyway. They have to come here. I have a hearing issue. And many of those coffee shops are not conducive to me hearing well.
Yeah.
Well, so I much prefer. But I do have a mentee who's a police officer in Saskatoon who's overcoming post-traumatic stress disorder. He has overcome it, and he wants to help other first responders. So we do Zoom sessions just like this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'd certainly utilize the technology. I mean, I'm a social entrepreneur. I decided when I was putting the book together that I was going to do a buy one, give one model. So for everyone that's purchased, it's beautiful to be able to go down to the connect with the YWCA or one of the other women's foundations, not-for-profits and charities, and gift them a stack of books. So love doing that, but it does mean that I'm more cautious about polluting the environment. I don't go downtown just for one trip. So I either bunch my trips or I do a lot of Zoom or virtual e-coffees as well. It's just more effective, more efficient.
Right.
So I know that you've had with your work, I mean, you've done quite a lot of work with individuals, organizations. I recognize quite a lot of them as sort of downtown corps, you know, Shell, Husky, City of Calgary, etc., as well as education and health associations. So I was delighted to be able to refer Patricia as a speaker last week. That's the kind of thing that we speakers try to do for each other, which is lovely.
Yes, thank you.
I was curious, though, to learn a little bit more in terms of, so much experience, so many things that you could share, in your workshops, the ones that you love to do where you see the most impact, if there was maybe two or three things that you could share with the listeners that are really exceptional lessons that you've learned through your own unique experience that would help with resilience and building resilience.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
So number one is pay attention to your self-talk. Our self-talk is incredibly powerful. I mean, this is not new. Everybody kind of talks about self-talk. It's estimated that two-thirds of the average person's self-talk is negative, the put-downs pieces. So catching them is tricky work, and then reframe them. A lot of people believe in affirmations, but many people are busy doing affirmations that aren't all that effective. You need to find out what your core beliefs are first, and then start to collapse those core beliefs and replacing them. I have a creative intelligence. I have a social intelligence. I have an intelligence that allows me, if I can figure out how to make something work or how to explain it, I can explain complicated theories in simple manners. That's a gift I have. And in school, it was called being stupid, and my father called it being stupid, but I struggle to learn in the first place. But if I can figure it out, I can transfer it. So we can take almost any of the negative self-talk and take a look at where was the moment that happened,
right?
Often in childhood,
yeah,
that got ingrained. So that's number one. I can't help people deeply with that in workshops or keynotes, but I can at least bubble up awareness.
Yeah.
So the self-talk. Number two is taking care of our bodies. And there's Brené Brown, who most of us women have been exposed to and adore, mm-hmm. Shame and vulnerability researcher, says that women's biggest shame piece is around our bodies. And only if I had appreciated my body when I was 20, you know, if only when I was 30, I appreciated my body when I was 20. Only if I was 40, if I appreciated my body when I was 30. Then I got to the point that, heck, I'm 72 years old now, and I'm just going to love my body. But why did it take me to 72 years to get it? Right? Because I look at pictures of myself, and I'm like, oh, God, look at that stomach, or look at that face, or look at that neck, or whatever. And then I'd look back 10 years later and say, holy smokes, I looked pretty good when I was 20. I looked pretty good when I was 30. Well, I've decided I look pretty good right now.
You do.
Thank you. So yeah. That's been a bad, but look how long it took me. So that's, you know, take care of this vessel. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean skinny or any particular look that we've been bought into. You know, even the models get airbrushed. Yeah. I just loved Oprah for one of her magazines. She showed what she looked like first thing in the morning, and then all the steps to get on the cover of her magazine. It was very, I thought, brave of her.
Yeah.
So we women are sold a bill of goods. And who decided wrinkles were ugly? Like, who decided that?
They're called laughter lines.
The cosmetic industry. So that's probably the second one. Take care of the body, and particularly for women, don't value for how it looks, but what it can do. I love the book Reviving Ophelia, which is about teenagers and how we need to tell our young women to appreciate all that their body can do.
Yes.
And quit taking the emphasis on, don't you look pretty in that dress or whatever.
Yeah.
That's number two. And having a sense of humor is really, really helpful. That would be three, but I want to add four. And that is, for me, I have spent my life often going to workshops and reading books on life purpose. Mm-hmm. And I have concluded a very simple line, and that is, know your gifts, use your gifts, and give what you can. That's it. Living on purpose.
Lovely.
The trick is to know your strengths and your gifts. And I love you. You and I have so much in common. I put in just about every one of my handouts, just about every one of my workshops, Martin Seligman's free. Yep. Google Martin Seligman, Seligman, via signature strengths, and up comes 240 questions. You fill it in, and it can affirm what you your intuition probably already knew.
Yeah.
Or has you questioning, oh, is that a strength that maybe I am not paying attention to?
Yeah, he calls them character strengths. For me, when I read them, they're values. And, you know, my very, very, very first one is creativity. And I know that it's one of those things that my colleague Linda Mers says, you know, what is it that you cannot not do?
Right.
Sometimes people have to listen to that twice, right? What is it you cannot not do? So you're compelled. You have to do it. Otherwise, you're going to go nuts. For me, it's creativity. If I don't have some element of my day that is creative, mm-hmm. I am not a happy camper. And that's partly why I love any kind of transformation. So when I went back 10 years ago, before I took my executive coach certification, I went back through some of my own learnings. You know, where were the high points? What was I extremely proud of in my career? Where did I make a contribution that was really impactful and leveraged things that I love to do and started putting together? I think it's in my book too, the skills, interests, passions, and values, and where they all intersect is the sweet spot where you can really start to, you know, step into doing something that you love every day and getting paid for it. How much fun is this, right?
And if you can't get paid, go volunteer. There are some people in some circumstances that's not going to work for them.
Yeah.
Because they've got a pension that's coming up in a number of years, or they've got children, or they're established, and they discover their strength, and there's too much at risk. And I say, well, then get involved with your community or find some outlet. for you, because you will not live as fully and as freely and as you won't flourish if you're not using your strengths.
And thank you for being that.
When you're in your strength zone, it's like a nourishment that comes.
Yeah. Well, as you know, this year I rebranded my business. So because of the speaking and the radio show and the book, Women and Wisdom Media is the new name. The previous name I've been working under for the past 4 years is Flourish. Flourish with Yvonne Silver. So it's one of those crazy words that it rhymes with nourish, but it is all about the things that when we as women celebrate the gifts and the special things that we can bring to bear. And I talk about this in the Bold Women Leaders events I've been hosting, which October the 9th is the next one of those coming up. But talk about, you know, what are the competencies, the skills that women actually do more effectively as women leaders than some of our male counterparts do, and really step into and celebrate those things. So it's been lovely listening to you share some of your insights, talking so many of these experiences are hugely valuable to the work that you're doing, what you're able to share. And I was wondering if there was another way that the listeners could keep in touch with you, if there was anything in particular you wanted to share with them in our last few minutes.
Well, thank you. I would suggest that they go to my website, Solutions for Resilience. That's Solutions for Resilience. And get my free, it's an ebook. It's called Stress Solutions, Tried and True Resiliency Strategies for Busy Lives. And on this day and age, everybody seems to be busy. There's a lot of people apologizing for being busy or apologizing for not being busy. I say, be as busy as you want or as less busy as you want. You decide. This book might help you decide all of that. Again, go to Solutions for Resilience and download Stress Solutions. Also, Solutions for Resilience is a Facebook page, and I'd love to connect with people. I post, I think, really interesting little video clips and articles, and lots of there's lots of dialogue going on. So if they'd like to join me there, that would be wonderful. So I appreciate this opportunity, Yvonne. I recommend your book. It really gives women, as I said, the power tools to speak up.
Well, it was fun writing it, and it's even more fun, reading somebody else's book review. So thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. And make sure that you, when you're on Pat's page, that you like it. If there's a blog post that you see on there that you feel would be a great share, feel free to share it, Twitter it, tweet it, tag it, link it, put it on LinkedIn, because this is really where women can celebrate women. And when you rise from this kind of tragedy to this kind of triumph, as Pat has done, I believe that's worth celebrating and worth sharing the good news about. So thank you so much, Pat, for joining me today. And I look forward to our continued connections and seeing what we can do to help the world become more resilient and step up those confident conversations. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye for now.
Wow. What a fabulous interview with Patricia Morgan. Thank you so much, Patricia. Before we close the show for today, I wanted to let you know about an event coming up here in Calgary on September 17th, on Tuesday. The event is it's a morning breakfast session. It'll be at the Calgary Petroleum Club. And this is for HR members, leaders, and executives who are intrigued to learn more about mentoring. It's called The Art of Mentoring, Unlocking the Power of Mentorship for Profitability, Productivity, and Innovation. So I have an expert speaker coming in to join me, Dr. Ravi Gunlapalli, who's the CEO for MentorCloud in Silicon Valley. And he and I are going to be talking about how mentorship impacts improving employee engagement. This is really all about getting prepared for the upcoming economic turnaround, I believe is imminent, and helping to explore ways to attract and retain the best talent so that, you know, you really are unleashing that productivity, that innovation power that can be gained when seasoned what seasoned wisdom is transferred across the organization. Ravi is going to be speaking to the deeper benefits as well of this collaborative, what he calls cross-functional conversation. I mean, it can impact your bottom line, which is something everyone is trying to do right now. And also, it can be a tool, whether you're an organization, medium to large-sized organization, for-profit, or an association, to attract new members or new employees and attract and retain, but help them to be successful. And as you know, that's what I'm all about, is helping. My focus, obviously, is women in particular to flourish in business and having more confident conversations. I've done a ton of work in the mentorship area over the past few years. As you know, or maybe you didn't know, I was recognized as a woman of inspiration last fall for the mentorship work that I've been doing, working with associations, organizations, for-profit, not-for-profit, designing, chairing, and facilitating mentorship programs. So I hope you'll join me. If you are looking for the link, it is on Eventbrite. And again, as I mentioned, the title is The Art of Mentoring, Unlocking the Power of Mentorship for Profitability, Productivity, and Innovation. Or simply hop over to my website, wordswomenandwisdom.com. And right on the front page, there's the link to register and a bit more in the details about the event. So again, that's Words, Women, and, spelled out A-N-D, wisdom.com. Look forward to seeing you there. Meanwhile, have a great week. Bye for now.